Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. A Republican research firm says Governor Kristi Noem is polling at a 62% approval rating in the South Dakota Democratic Party box, taking the mask off the approach to the new school year and a review of Teresa Staley's term on the Sioux Falls City Council. It's time for the Dakota Political Junkies. Let's welcome Jonathan Ellis. He's an investigative reporter and columnist for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. Hey, Jonathan.
Hey, Lori. These days, I'm just a homebound reporter at the Argus Leader.
He is a homebound reporter and sidelined soccer coach.
Correct. Soccer coach, right.
Also with us is in Aberdeen, Northern State University, professor of political science, John Schaff. Welcome back, John.
Thanks for having me. I'm eager to hear the latest news from Jonathan's kitchen.
And here we are in July, hearing the news from Jonathan's kitchen. Let's start with this public opinion strategies and a poll of the approval rating of Governor Noem. 62% of South Dakotans say she's doing a good job as governor. That breaks down to 66% East River and 53% West River. Jonathan Ellis, I know you feel strongly about polls and what they mean and what they don't mean, so I'm going to start with you.
Well, I mean, they're just snapshots in time, obviously. It matters how the questions are asked. But if you, and we generally don't report on polls that are conducted outside of, you know, we generally don't rely on polls to inform readers of what's going on because we don't have any idea necessarily of how they were conducted. That said, if you want to take this poll at face value, it's quite a remarkable turnaround from where Governor Noem was polling at the beginning of the year. There was a poll conducted earlier that showed her as one of the most unpopular governors in the country at the beginning of the year. There was another poll conducted sort of in April amid the the climax of the fears of this pandemic, in which a majority of South Dakotans didn't necessarily approve of the way she was handling that. But today, I think her handling of this and how she's dealt with the crisis has really propelled her, if we, again, accept this poll. And I kind of do, just anecdotally and talking to people, I think a lot of people really do accept the way she's handled this crisis. And that's really, I think so now some people have forgotten some of the issues that before this pandemic started, there were some, you know, she had some missteps. And I think her handling of this, and I give her credit at least for the fact that, you know, for weeks in the beginning of this, she was in front of the people almost every day, giving press conferences and informing people of what was going on. You can agree or disagree with the decisions she's made, but she has been in front of the public, you know, certainly in the beginning stages of this. And so I think, you know, she's been rewarded a little bit by that in this polling. It's actually interesting to me that she's lower West River than she is East River, because West River, of course, was what, in the end of the day, won her the election.
John Schaff, your initial thoughts on this poll and what it tells us and doesn't tell us about how South Dakotans approve of their governor right now.
Well, I think I agree with everything Jonathan says about skepticism towards polls, and even in this case, one that is generated by a partisan group. But I also agree that it's gotten political science nerd talk. We'd say facial validity. It makes sense on the face of it. I wouldn't be surprised if Kristi Noem's popularity has gone up quite a bit since those polls that Jonathan talked about that showed her one of the least popular governors in the state. And I think what we've seen, I think, is two things. One of the reasons I think that Kristi Noem's popularity was relatively low some months ago was, I think, especially when you think about her first year as governor, I think there was some shakiness, some missteps. That first session, legislative session she went through a year and a half ago, I think you'd call it very uneven. But what Jonathan's talking about when he says that, you know, Kristi Noem was in front of the cameras, in front of the people every day there for a while, is that there's no substitute for, you might say, aggressive leadership, or at least the appearance of competent leadership, that when you kind of pick a course, stick to the course, and show a level of competence that you know, whatever else you could say about Kristi Noem, when you watch those press conferences, she seemed to have a lot of information on her fingertips. She seemed to have a grasp of what was going on and could speak about it in intelligent and systematic way that I think would give the impartial observer the impression she knows basically what she's doing. And I think you've seen that in places, you know, why is Andrew Cuomo in New York one of the most popular governors in the state today? Andrew Cuomo and Kristi Noem chose almost diametrically opposite tactics. Granted, New York had a much more dire situation than South Dakota had, but what both had in common is that they showed steady leadership. And they showed, I think, decisive leadership, whereas I think people, like, even I think you look at the president, who tried to be on kind of all sides of every single COVID issue. Maybe that's one of the reasons why he's suffering. The other thing I'd mention is, speaking of the president, obviously what has happened especially over the last month, is Kristi Noem has really tied herself to President Trump. And, of course, President Trump, I think, remains relatively popular within the state, and she's gotten a lot of national press. She's got a lot of press around the 4th of July activities with the president, and that has no doubt influenced how people think of her, especially when you remember she had a very tightly fought nomination race against Marty Jackley, and so even Republicans were divided on Kristi Noem. And I suspect one of the things that has led to her newfound popularity is that Republicans have probably come home, as they probably, you know, if they like her COVID response, but also as she has aligned herself with a president that Republicans obviously are strongly in favor of. I think that has probably drawn a lot of those Republicans who are uneven or unsure about Kristi Noem kind of back into the fold where they would normally have been.
So this poll was taken in June before the 4th of July, and the Democratic Party has, of course, been quick to point out that the July 4th event and events since then could be changing her popularity. Jonathan, do you think the 4th of July events among Republicans specifically boosted her popularity a little bit more, or do you think that the way the money was spent has a risk of draining a little bit of that popularity?
I will confess that I didn't watch the event. I was on a lake on a boat drinking beer and watching 4th of July myself. But I will say I have seen snippets of the speech that came out of that President Trump and both Governor Noem made at that event. I have talked to people who watched that, some Republicans. They absolutely loved the event. I think that $350,000 of economic development money, a lot of people are going to say, who cares? Because how much money did that generate in terms of goodwill for South Dakota among, you know, a lot of Republicans? So, you know, I understand where the Democrats are coming from on that. I just, at the end of the day, I think from the people I've talked to, they really love the event.
Yeah. John Schaaf, it looks like it might be closer to $1.5 million so far of funds, but the State Tourism Department is saying that's $22 million in exposure and benefits. Do you think the 4th of July, John, boosts Governor Noem? Because also she has this national audience, and more people know who she is. She gets a ride on Air Force One with the president. Or are her faithful, you know, supporters here in the state concerned about where the money came from and how that information was shared?
No, I think Jonathan's probably absolutely right. And even though I think there's, as you're saying, the Noem administration is making the claim, which has some validity to it, that the state probably made more money than it spent on it through exposure. And there were, you know, if you read some of the pieces, there were people who came from out of state who maybe otherwise wouldn't have come to the Black Hills just for this event, and they spent money, and we made sales tax revenue off of that. And so my suspicion is that whatever uneasiness there might be about spending state money on what was a quasi political event is going to be countered by the goodwill from the event itself, and then the possibility that we recoup that money and more from it. So I think from the governor's point of view, simply strictly politically, I can't see how this is anything but the 4th of July festivities were anything but a win for her, got her a lot of publicity, a lot of national publicity. And, you know, when we've talked about this before, that when she's on these national shows and getting this national attention, she always makes sure to promote South Dakota as a place to be, as a place to live, as a place maybe people might want to relocate their businesses. And I think that can't help but increase her popularity, certainly, as I say, amongst Republicans who might have been uneasy with her. I think it can't help but improve her status among them.
Yeah, which goes back go ahead, Jonathan.
Yeah, sorry, just to piggyback on what John is saying, not just this 4th of July event, but my newspaper is publishing a story this afternoon that myself and a colleague, Joe Sneevy, have been working on. Talking about all of the people who have come to South Dakota over the last few months because the state was not on lockdown. And there is a huge amount. I mean, I've talked to people from Seattle. There are people from all over the Michigan. People from all over the country have come here because of the decisions that she made. And again, people who are heavily criticized her, but you know, and this 4th of July event, to me, just kind of culminates, this just shows that this is a place that you can come to. Now, were there risks in all of that? Definitely. And maybe we'll still see some. I mean, I'm on press calls and with the Department of Health, and people are still asking, are we seeing any cases coming from this Mount Rushmore event? And so far, nothing has been identified. But among a certain segment of the population, what this governor has done has been highly appreciated around the country.
Let's talk a little bit about opening up schools in the fall, because there's been pressure from the White House. School districts across the state of South Dakota are again, making, and I think it's unlikely that they ever stopped talking about what would happen for activities and school buildings in the fall. Congressman Johnson and Senator Rounds were at the downtown Sioux Falls Rotary, and both addressed it with slightly different tones. Senator Rounds said, yeah, we need to abolish the Department of Education, and there shouldn't be a Congressman Johnson mentioned, threatening funding might not be the best way to encourage people to go back. So let's talk a little bit about opening schools. And John Schaaf, give me an idea of... we're back in that point where everybody's making decisions that make sense for them, but that's also a very confusing place to be as districts try to figure out their individual needs and individual responses.
And this, I think this is probably one of those instances where everybody talks about local control until it becomes politically inconvenient to them, and then no one's for local control. But this might be a case where local control is really the right thing to do, and so it might be best if the White House stays out of it. So I understand why why people are concerned, because we're going to go back to this when we shut down schools in the first place, is we have choices before us, all of them fraught with peril, because we know that once people get into schools, you're putting people in the confined spaces, and we all know what the potential of that is. On the other hand, what happens if schools aren't open, or if they're only open partially? We're getting lots of data about how little education went on in the spring after school closed down. We have parents concerned about how do I make a living if I have to be home with my kids and I'm supposed to go to work. We have all sorts of social services, and in a sense, that are delivered through our school system. Or talking with someone recently about how important the schools are for detecting things like abuse and neglect. And so if the kids aren't in the school, the counselors, the teachers don't pick up on some of these things. And so there's all, I was just listening to something this morning, that there are national polls that if you divide people who have children in school versus everybody else, people with children who are school age, a vast majority of Americans are in favor of those Americans are in favor of reopening the schools. But I think we are in this situation where there probably is no good decision to be made, because no matter what we do, there's probably going to be a negative outcome. And so, like at the beginning of the COVID crisis, I do not envy policymakers who have to make a decision that is inevitably going to make some people mad. And no matter what we choose, there are going to be bad outcomes, and those bad outcomes will be pointed out by people. And so no matter what people do, they're going to be open to criticism, and that criticism will have some legitimacy to it.
There are no good choices, only good decisions. Jonathan Ellis, I think sometimes we forget that Governor Noem closed those school buildings, and school went on, but the school buildings themselves were emptied before Governor Cuomo in New York did. Now, what's changed between then and now? Is it just that we have had time to prepare how to open them safely? Do we have more information about the how? Because the numbers haven't necessarily changed. We have 80 new cases today, for example, reported. 111 South Dakotans have died. That's fairly consistent. I'd have to go back and look with where we were at, in those early days with numbers. Why close down before quickly and come back now?
Well, something like John said, too, it's unfortunate that the president has gotten involved in this, because any time he does, it automatically becomes this tribal warfare issue. But I think that now, another point I would make, too, I don't think that Governor Noem would say that she closed down the schools. I think it was always that she recommended that schools be closed, and I think the school districts followed that. It's interestingly that the same day that she closed the schools, a number of school district leaders had been on a conference call with health officials who had urged them not to close schools. And you have to remember at the time, the CDC recommendations were not to close schools. Now, I think with a lot of more of this in the rearview mirror, we have an opportunity to kind of see what happened. We have, European schools, Asian schools that have all stayed open. We have an Icelandic study that showed that there was very little transmission of this disease from children to humans. I certainly understand the concerns of adults or teachers and things like that. So we've got a lot more science now to kind of evaluate the situation. I think as of yesterday, there were 826 confirmed cases among people who were 19 and under, and zero deaths. So the mortality for this disease for people of school age appears to be very remote, very slight, especially when you compare it to like regular influenza. So for this particular age group, it appears that you have to, again, cost benefit. What are the costs of not going back to school? As John pointed out, the education is not great. As a parent of two kids in school, I can attest to the fact that online education is not the same as going to school. And what are the other costs? I mean, the social alienation that kids are having, that's a problem. I think that we're going to have a clearer picture nationally of what suicide rates are going to look like. So I think we have to look at everything in totality, not just going back to school or not.
Yeah, maybe I misheard you, but I think you misspoke there by saying children's can't low transmission from children's to humans. I think you meant adults. Although as a parent, sometimes those kids, it's hard to imagine.
Apparently, you've never met my children.
No,
my daughter's 19 right now, and she's just a fabulous human. So they do grow up. We're gonna have to leave that.
Lori, I think if you look at this Icelandic study, it shows that children to adult transmission is very remote. It's adults giving it to children, but that's more, according to this study, that's how the transmission occurs. So children are not necessarily giving it to adults. Adults are giving it to children.
Thank you for clarifying. We're going to have to leave it there for now. More on this topic later. John Schaaf and Jonathan Ellis, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Lori.